our overconsumption with meat is causing two battles. It's causing the battle that we're hurting our mothers, but it's also causing the battle that we're destroying Mother Earth. Our overconsumption of meat is burning down our Amazons. It's hurting our children. And it's particularly diabetes, which is the umbrella disease, leading cause of non-limb amputation, leading cause of blindness, one of the leading causes of kidney failure, heart disease. All of these diseases are born out of diabetes. And the enemy of diabetics is saturated fat. And one of the greatest contributors of saturated fat is meat. We need to see the connections. And that is what I'm doing. I'm using this moment to show people the connection to what they are feeling is associated to what they're eating. And that is the mission that we are on right now.
And that was Brooklyn Borough's president, Eric Adams. Hi guys, I'm your host, Christina. Welcome to another episode. I'm really excited about this one. So Eric Adams, Brooklyn Borough's president, is an amazing, prolific speaker, a politician, and an activist. And he does just tons of amazing work within the world of plant-based nutrition. I first heard him speak at the American College of Lifestyle Medicine conference back this fall in 2019. And there were 1,500 people in the room, and he had everybody standing and applauding at the end of his speech because of how much power and energy he brings and how much conviction he speaks with. A former cop of about 22 years in New York City police, where as a part of his mission, he fought for equality. He then retired and went into politics. He was in 2013, he was elected as Brooklyn Borough's president. And for those of you who don't know, it's my understanding equal to county executives. There are five boroughs in New York, and Brooklyn is one of them, one of the largest ones. So he was elected as Brooklyn Borough's president in 2013, and he was also the first African-American to hold that position at the time. And then he was reelected again in November 2017. As a part of his journey, in 2016, he was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and he describes more about his story in our interview, but he basically lost his vision in one of his eyes, and he was suffering nerve damage, and he was threatened with amputation, and he went against the initial recommendation of his doctors and decided to pursue a whole food plant-based diet. And as the miracle usually works with plant-based nutrition, within 3 months, Eric has reversed his diabetes and has subsequently been able to impact the health of all the other people that he shared his story with. And today he's really motivated by that experience. So we get in all of that in the interview. He talks about his journey, what it felt like, how he found the motivation and conviction to went against the to go against the current and look at reversing diabetes versus living with diabetes. He speaks a lot about that. And then he also talks about how that experience now informs and drives the work that he does today within politics. We also talk a lot about COVID and how both how and why the topic of prevention of disease and lifestyle choices and lifestyle medicine is especially important at the time of the pandemic, and also how that folds into the issue of ethnic and racial equality within healthcare. So I really hope you enjoy the interview. And then after this interview, it's a pretty short one this time, it's about 30 minutes. But then after that, I actually bring in my dear friend Zach Juno, who shares some of his wins recently and the transitions that he has done in his life and his family's life during this pandemic. And I truly adore Zach. We used to work together on the same team. We both work at Emory, but he works now, or rather I work on a different team. He's in the same team still. But I hope you enjoy meeting, for those of you who haven't met him yet, I hope you enjoy meeting my friend, and I hope, in fact, I don't hope, I have no doubt that you will gather some inspiration and light from the story, the recent story of transformation that he shares. I hope you're all doing well. I know this time is not easy on all of us, but there is a blessing in everything, and I really hope that you're able to find yours. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Follow Your Kind podcast. Today, I have an absolute privilege to have Brooklyn Borough's president, Eric Adams, on the show today. Thank you so much for joining, Eric.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. It is my absolute pleasure. It is my absolute honor. As I mentioned earlier, I had an honor seeing you and hearing you speak in person at the ACLM conference this past year, ACLM 2019. And for those who don't know, it's the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, which is a national organization and society of the physicians and healthcare professionals who promote and do a lot of work about educating for lifestyle medicine. And I don't know exact number, I think it's 3,500 members about that today.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And there were 1,500 people at that conference, and they had to cap it because more people were planning and they just did not have any more capacity. And to hear you speak there, I mean, you're just such an inspirational speaker and such a, you have such a powerful message. And to have you be present at that conference, I think it was just such an amazing event. I bet it felt amazing for you as well. But for the listeners and for some of those who may not be aware with your story, can you tell us what got you on the path of plant-based nutrition, how you learned about it, and what effect it made in your life?
The conference was amazing also, having the energy of so many people in the room that were moving in the right direction. I think sometimes we ignore the energy that we bring to a room. Those almost 1,500 people who were there filled up the room with just positive thoughts, and you felt it when you hear that term, the electricity was in the air. That's what we're talking about, you know, our energy just really lighten up the room and lighten up, you know, our spirit and our sense of commitment. And that was a coming full circle in communicating and also thanking the pioneers that really they have led this battle about, you know, improving the lives of people. And so my journey was no different in the beginning than so many other Americans. It's just the ending part that we're living now that is different. And I'm hoping other Americans will follow it. I had a traditional American diet. After retiring from the police department, I did 22 years there, and I retired as a captain. And I had, you know, what police officers eat for the most part. You know, everything from fried, sweet, processed food every day. And it wasn't until after leaving the police department, I became a state senator. I served for 3.5 terms, of which was 7 years. And I then became the Brooklyn Borough president. For those in outside New York City, that's equivalent to your county executive. New York City has 5 counties. Brooklyn is the largest with 2.6 million people. And I'm the county executive of that borough. And I was way out of the country, and I experienced a very sharp sort of discomforting feeling in my stomach. And I thought, sure, it was colon cancer because I just lost a friend to colon cancer and it wasn't moving. So it wasn't like a gas feeling. And, you know, men, normally when we get sick, you have to drag us to the hospital because we basically feel, you know, you suck it up. You know, from my years of sports, I just basically try to dismiss it. But it was just, it stayed on me. And when I returned to America, I went to the doctor, my internist. And he checked my colon and he checked my stomach. And after when I came out of sedation, He says, Eric, your colon is fine, but you have a small ulcer. But he said, your real problem is your diabetes. He said, your diabetes is in a coma level. You know, he says, you have type 2 diabetes. And at the same time, I lost my sight in my left eye, and I was losing my sight in my right. My ophthalmologist told me I had to give up my driver's license because I was legally blind, and I could not drive a car anymore. Wow. And I was having tingling in my hands and feet. I could not even feel my right thigh. I thought it was from football, and it was just totally numb. And of course, my cholesterol was high, my blood pressure was high, my PSA was high. You know, I was just really a mess. And what was fascinating is how everything materialized almost at the same time. There were some things that were harboring under the surface of my skin, but I was feeling symptoms at the same time. And now I understood why it is recommended at age 50 you do this, at age 60 you do this test, because the abuse of your body, science basically know, you know, after 50 years of eating the American diet, it's going to be time for you now to look at how your body checked in. And so the doctor said, Eric, you're going to be on medicine the rest of your life. And I went to 5 experts in New York, endocrinologists. And they were the best in their fields. And they told me that, you know, it was nothing that could be done. They all set the same script. It was as though they pulled out the same notebook and read the same line, that it's hereditary, you know, it's your too much carbohydrates, too much sugar. They all gave me that, you know, at this point, settle into your new norm. And I just refused to believe it. And I went to the computer and I did something I like to say scientific. I Googled reversing diabetes. Now, what's important here out of the whole story of what happened is that I didn't type living with diabetes, because that was all I heard. How to live with diabetes, living with diabetes. Even the pamphlets that were given to me from the doctors said living with diabetes. But instead of typing living with diabetes, I typed reversing diabetes. And information came up. Some great doctors who are friends now, Dr. Greger, Dr. Bonner, Dr. Esselton, Dr. Dean Ornish, all of these people came up. And from their reading, I was just really blown away. And I called Dr. Esselton, told him who I was, and asked, could I come down to see him? I flew down to Ohio. He was at the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio. And he just told me, change your diet, Eric. And I remember when he said that, I looked at him. I said, I'm going blind. And this guy, this nut, is telling me to stop eating chicken. What's wrong with this guy? And so, but awareness is amazing. Because when I got back to New York and I looked in my pantry, and in my fridge, I noticed for the first time there was nothing there that was healthy. Everything was processed. Mm-hmm. Macaroni and cheese in the box. All of the bread was processed. I started reading labels. I remember sitting on the kitchen floor just reading the labels, and it just all became so real that this is what the doctors were saying. And all of the things, my instant oatmeal that I ate every morning religiously, it was spiking my sugar, just the cakes. And I was just blown away. I said, this is what he was talking about. And so I discarded all of the food and went whole food, plant-based. And 3 weeks after, my vision came back. And 3 months after, my nerve damage went away, my diabetes went in reversal. The ulcer that started the journey went away. No medicine, just food, the power of food.
That is remarkable. That is such a remarkable story. And again, I remember you telling it at the ACLM and you showing the pictures as well of the change. And
I mean, I'm looking at you right now. You're so full of energy. You're so strong and you look so young. And it's amazing the change the food that can make in our life. And as you said, like not losing hope and not taking the label that you're given for an answer, not just going with that, is such a crucial point of decision and so, so important.
No, it is. And it's I wish I could just share with people how it felt being told that in one day your life was going to make this drastic change. I remember sitting there thinking to myself, like, do I go and get a CNI dog? Do I get a cane? You know, do I resign from being borough president? You know, how do I sit down and share this with my family? I started thinking about, you know, do you go in a wheelchair? All of these crazy thoughts were just in my head. And then when I sat at that computer and just typed, there was a moment of just desperation. And when all of that information came up, I just wanted to believe. And when I knew I had a chance that I can regain control of my life, I can't even tell you how that felt. You know, it was just an unbelievable moment, you know. And if I remember making the promise to the universe that if I'm able to see myself through this, I'm going to recommit my life to saving children and families. And that's what we've been doing. This is not work for me. This is purpose. And I was blessed to be revived. And so I'm on a purposeful mission. And I was an activist as a police officer. I fought for equality in policing. And I thought that was my legacy. I thought that was going to be what people knew of me and how I would be defined. But this is my legacy. This is my legacy.
This is such a beautiful message. And first of all, thank you for sharing that. It sounds very personable and very vulnerable, but yet so powerful. It also is a beautiful stepping stone into transitioning to how does that now inform the work that you do, the mission that you're on today? Because it is a complicated, I cannot only imagine, it is a complicated field to be in. And there are so many different competing priorities and there are so many issues to address. So how does your personal experience inform and motivate the work that you do today within politics?
I feel in life that sometimes we believe we're buried and instead we're planted, and the fruits of our harvest is going to feed generations, just as a tree will produce fruits every season. I believe when you identify that you're planted and not buried, the fruits of your harvest will continue to produce over and over again. And there's so many examples of that. We're benefiting from the harvest of so many men and women. And I believe the fruits of my harvest is materializing over and over again. And really the healthcare system of our tradition really has no match for folks like Dr. Ornish and Dr. Greger and myself, because nothing gets in the way of a woman or a man who is mission driven. And we are making incremental steps as we move forward. As we look at everything from pushing Meatless Mondays here in school, in the 4-year period, we got the city to have a 50% decrease in the beef that they purchase. We no longer purchase any processed meat. to serve children in school. We have some of our hospitals going to meet this Monday. Some of our prisons going to meet this Monday. We have a new program at Bellevue Hospital, and it's very significant. Bellevue Hospital, oldest hospital in America, and it is the first hospital in America to start a lifestyle medicine clinic. And so the signals are all around us. If you ignore the signals, you don't appreciate the signals. But I am not ignoring the signals. I'm conscious of the roadmap and the signs that are telling me how many miles more we have to go on this journey. I'm moving in the right direction. And when we show the numbers from the Bellevue clinic, and amazing Dr. McMackin, who's mission driven, we're going to start to really show the power of whole food, plant-based diets and lifestyle. And, you know, so some people may ask, well, Eric, why are you talking about the meat portion of this? The meat portion of this, our overconsumption with meat, is causing two battles. It's causing the battle that we're hurting our mothers, but it's also causing the battle that we're destroying Mother Earth. Our overconsumption of meat is burning down our Amazons. It's you know, it's hurting our children. And it's particularly diabetes, which is the umbrella disease, leading cause of non-limb amputation, leading cause of blindness, one of the leading causes of kidney failure, heart disease. All of these diseases are born out of diabetes. And the enemy of diabetics is saturated fat. And one of the greatest contributors of saturated fat is meat. You know, we need to see the connections. And that is what I'm doing. I'm using this moment to show people the connection to what they are feeling is associated to what they're eating. And that is the mission that we are on right now.
That is so beautiful and so powerful, and you put it in such a cohesive, logical way that just leaves no room for any doubt in this argument. I also find it interesting, you talk about connection and the values that you brought up earlier that you were talking about when describing the ACLM conference, the energy, the commitment, and the gratitude that you felt. It also sounds like your path is come in full circle. You mentioned that you were, you considered it your mission to fight for the equality when you were a policeman, and now you all have this new level of transformation, and now you also are working on racial equality, but then within healthcare. And I know you're working on a new campaign specifically related to that topic. Can you talk more about how racial disparity folds in with healthcare, plant-based diet, and how that is especially important to talk about during the COVID pandemic?
And so true. And this is not only professional, it's personal. Because, you know, mom was diabetic for 15 years. She was on insulin for 7 years. And she never got used to injecting herself with insulin. And if she did get used to it, her facial muscles did not get the memo because they constantly grimaced each time she pricked her body with the needle. And when she joined me on Whole Food Plant Based, she was able to reverse her insulin usage in 2 months. She called me and stated, you know, baby, I'm no longer have to take insulin. And when you look at the number of mothers and grandmothers that have been betrayed, our healthcare system, it has betrayed us. And that betrayal is not out of just mean-spiritedness. It's because the institution of medicine has betrayed those countless numbers of doctors, nurses, and even nutritionists who are giving their lives. You know, there's no doctor that says, I want my patient to be amputated. There's no doctor that says, I want my patient to lose their sight. There's no nurse that enjoys watching what is happening, the decline. And we know the decline. We know it starts off with metformin or some other pill, then it goes to insulin, then it goes to blindness, amputation, kidney failure, dialysis. We know it, and it has to be painful to watch patient after patient. And, you know, you begin to say, you know, hey, doctor, am I going to be all right? As I talked about being a police officer, and you know they're not. That's traumatic, you know. So not only are we saving patients, but we're saving the healthcare professionals from going through the trauma. You know, they think they're blocking it out and say, you know, I'm just not going to think about this. I'm just going to treat it about as a profession. But the human body is like a sponge. It's going to absorb the wetness of death and sickness, if we like it or not, until we're oversaturated. And so what we are doing now is we have wrung out the sponge and showing people in impoverished and poor community, from African Americans to immigrants to even what health has done to the American Indians is unbelievable. When you go to some of their reservations and where they live, diabetes and heart disease, you know, what we have done to the planet, we have done to the indigenous people as well. And those disparities are just so blatant. And as we look at this pandemic that we're experiencing, 94% of the people who died from coronavirus had pre-existing conditions. And so this is almost like the childhood game of connected dots. You know, 94% die pre-existing conditions. Pre-existing condition is a big word for just saying diabetes, heart disease, respiratory diseases, high blood pressure. Those are pre-existing conditions. And pre-existing conditions come from, ironically, from the bad diets that people are being fed. And the real irony is that in these poorer communities, they are fed by governmental entities. So we are feeding the healthcare crises by the bad food we're giving people who depend on us to eat. That's the tragedy. You know, on one breath, we are saying that we want to have a Department of Health that teaches people to fight childhood obesity, childhood diabetes, and childhood asthma. Yet every day we feed our children in school food that causes childhood obesity, childhood diabetes, childhood asthma. We do it in our hospitals. You get surgery for colon cancer. You go back to the room, you're given a low fiber diet that creates colon cancer. You have heart surgery. As soon as you get back to the room, there's a nice piece of cheese that's waiting for you. So we are in this schizophrenic relationship of saying we want to be healthy when we feed the destruction of our bodies and we feed the healthcare crises. And coronavirus really personifies that, that we are feeding people the food that is causing them to have the worst outcomes on coronavirus.
And again, this is, you're such a prolific communicator, and I so appreciate you being in this field. We need you so much in the position that you are, and we all need you so much to go even further and bigger with this. And I was talking to Rachel last night. I was like, can we got you here. Let's go further. But also on the flip side, with all of the media that we see today and with all of the news and all of the negativity that we get, and especially doing the work that you do, I'm sure you face so much opposition. How do you find hope in what you do?
That's fascinating, because you know, you do get sometimes worn down when you leave a meeting and you talk to people who are responsible for food purchasing in the largest city, and they are just reluctant. You almost have a level of, you know, just denseness. It's like, I mean, here's the science. The science is clear. Or if you leave a hospital and you lay out the programming or health insurance, a company who can save money, by preventing disease and not responding. And you sort of leave these meetings sometimes and you feel as though, you know, wow, what a pushing this boulder up the hill is just so challenging. And it is as though the universe is waiting for those moments of low level. And someone will walk up to you and say, hey, aren't you Eric Adams? Yes. Hey, I was supposed to go in for dialysis. And I no longer have to go because I read your article. Or someone would stop you and say, you know what? I dropped 30 pounds and I'm no longer on blood pressure meds. And you start to hear these stories and you realize that you're not pushing that boulder up the hill alone. Someone saw you struggling, they came along and now they gave you a hand. And it's just like, yes, I know why I'm doing this. You know, I know why I'm doing this. And those stories come in text, emails, letters, people who just feel the joy of no longer just existing, but really living. And inside all of us that are weighted with the challenges of life is the human being that we know we could become. And when we find our place through becoming disease-free, we start to see that human being that we knew we can always become. And the beauty of it is oftentimes people find it when they're in the latter years of their lives. When you can turn around your life at 60 or 80, like my mother, you see that life has not ended, it has just begun. And it infuses a new energy inside you. And that is what I see when I hear from the seniors or from even some of the young people or people who are going through challenging times in their life. Imagine, just starting a job and all of a sudden being told you are diabetic or told that you have heart disease and believing that you're going to be on statin and other drugs for the rest of your life. And now there's a way out. You know, that's an amazing new start to your life. Someone giving you a belief that you hit a period and you just learn you just hit a comma because you're going to transition into a better part of this sentence of your life. It's amazing.
Wow, Eric. What an answer. I cannot thank you enough for the work that you do. I cannot thank you enough for the time that you've given me today and to the listeners. I cannot thank you enough for the amazing perspective and the lens that you have that seems to transform any kind of laser sharp light into this beautiful golden light that heals and spreads and lights up the light in others. I haven't met you, I haven't talked to you in person before, but I just feel like you're speaking directly to my heart. So I really, really appreciate the vulnerability and your willingness to share your message. I do want to be respectful of your time. So I'll transition to our last question. But before I do that, are there any other words that you wanted to share?
No. You ask great questions.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So the name of the podcast is Follow Your Kind. And my intention for this is to explore what kindness means to others. So maybe people can explore their kindness more and be intentional about following that in their lives. So what is your definition of kindness?
Kindness is a fascinating thing because we believe the recipient of our kindness is really benefiting the most from that. And it's not. There's a symbiotic relationship between what you give a person and kindness and what you receive. There's real healing emotionally. I think just as our body has a physical present, the anatomy of our spirit also has a present. And when you feed your body with healthy food, it receives the nutrition. When you feed yourself, the anatomy of your spirit with kindness, it gives you nutrition for your spirit as well. And that balance of spirit and body is what actually makes us have a full life. And so if I was just physically healthy because I ate well, but I was not kind every day, then I will have an off balance, an off-centered life in existence. So to me, kindness is feeding a nutritional spirit by giving kindness to others and receiving the benefits of it. And that's what I try to do every day.
What a beautiful answer. Eric, thank you so, so much for your time today. I hope you have the most absolutely wonderful day, and I can't wait to meet you in person.
I appreciate you, and you made my day a wonderful day by starting and speaking with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, hello. And here, as promised, I have my dear friend, Zach Juno. So me and Zach used to work together on the same team. We still work together at Emory Healthcare. However, we just don't work in the same department. But I miss you dearly, Zach. But we've been chatting recently, and Zach, you told me about the transformation that has been happening in your life and in your family's life amidst this pandemic. And can you share a little bit more about that insight?
Absolutely. So one of the things that happened during this pandemic is we wanted, as a family, to take an opportunity to reboot basically things that weren't working for us. And just to give you a little bit of background, I mean, we know each other personally, but the listeners don't. You know, I'm 42 years old. I have two children aged 4 years and 2 years. And, you know, I found myself in a rut emotionally with food choices. And I finally got to a point where I was just feeling sick, and this weight across my chest, way too much weight was on my body. And, you know, it was almost like I was screaming out but nothing was coming out of my mouth, really just in a frustrated state, like something has to change. And when we had to shelter in place, I thought, what a perfect opportunity to take stock of what is not working and really to retool to something that will work. And so my husband and I started shifting our diet to a plant-based diet. And we actually used an app as well, because we needed help tracking food and tracking water. And we really wanted to be intentional about what we were putting into our bodies. And so, you know, full disclosure, we had the chaotic home that you would expect of any family with young kids. We were grabbing meals on the go, eating processed foods, chips at night. And, you know, if I had a moment's honesty, it was almost like I was anesthetizing myself with food. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what it felt like, Christina. I felt like my body was just in a fog. Like, and now I know that it was just being taxed with all that digestion and processing of all these unhealthy foods. So we shift our diet. I have a scheduled annual physical, and I've always struggled with blood pressure and with cholesterol. And, you know, my doctor's always like, you know, you need to eat a low fat diet. And I've always thought, well, it's my genetics. I am genetically predisposed to battle with weight, to, you know, deal with high blood pressure, you know, to deal with cholesterol, because everybody in my family has been on blood pressure medications and statins. And so, you know, making this shift, I took off 26 pounds in a month.
This is remarkable.
And it's really a dramatic change. And this, and full disclosure, it's not starving myself. Like, I'm eating really, really good meals with dynamic flavors. And, you know, we're preparing food together as a family. So it's just a different thing. So I went to the doctor and I told him, I said, listen, I have made a lifestyle change, and you're about to take a blood sample, and I want you to know that if my cholesterol comes back high, I have done everything that I know how to do, and it might be time for me to jump on a cholesterol medication. And he agreed. You know, he said, let's check it out. So a couple days go by, and then I actually get a phone call from the doctor, and it really made me nervous, because usually they just put test results in a portal. Mm-hmm. And so he called me and he said, hey, I want to talk to you about your cholesterol. And I said, it's terrible, isn't it? And he said, no, it's dropped 100 points.
Oh my God.
And now my cholesterol is in the low normal range and my blood pressure is completely fine. Like it's, I no longer need medication for blood pressure and I feel so good. Like, you know, I have all this energy that I just did not have. I would come home exhausted from the chaotic life in a hospital that you know all too well. And, you know, then I would come home and I would have to be with my children and giving them, you know, energy and attention. And, it's given me, I have so much more energy for them, which means that I can be a mindful, present parent. It's just a gift. And the ripple effects of this, what I would call a family experiment, it's been amazing. I just feel so good. And, you know, and I didn't think, I mean, I used to look at you and all that you do and, you know, things that you're involved in with your fitness too, these incredible meals that you plan. And I told myself the lie, well, that won't work for me because, you know, she knows what she's doing. I can't make that happen. And the truth is that, you know, I have made it happen. And with not much energy, you know, I'm just very intentional about meal planning. We go to the farmer's market, we buy organic fruits and vegetables, and, you know, we are enjoying meals together. And I don't know, it's incredible.
This is amazing. And it's like just hearing your voice, it is so contagious. And to give you, I mean, with all due respect, you have, and you always had, since I've known you, you've always had so much on your plate. I mean, you are an amazing worker and you have an amazing work ethics. And then on top of that, you were always engaged with school to some degree or another. You have children. And I mean, you are such a good present parent and you do things within the community. You're really thoughtful about your friendships and relationships, as I know, and you put so much thought in the way that you do other things. So you always had so much on your plate. So to say that you're tired, it's not like you didn't have excuse to be tired, but now I can only imagine the things that you would do and also the joy that you will gather from life with all the energy and clarity that you have right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, the one thing that I would feel like if I could just like articulate the feeling into words, my body felt like sludgy, you know, like it was not operating well. Like I said, I felt this pressure and I really had a serious moment. I'm looking at my 4-year-old son in the bathtub one night and I'm like, I feel like I'm under so much pressure and it's not like emotional pressure. It's like a physical body pressure. And, you know, and it was, that's the thing is my body was, it was under attack with inflammation and there's, you know, so many things, the way that this food was affecting me. And now I feel like I eat to live rather than live to eat. It's totally been a shift.
I mean, it's just beautiful to hear, and you put it into words so well. And just also seeing how it's not just a diet for you, right? But you're completely weaving this into your lifestyle. And, you know, like you do cook beautiful meals. I mean, you sent me the pictures. I've seen those things. That looks amazing. The bean dishes that you make. And yeah, I mean, and to say that, it's also so much fun to shop for fruits and veggies and to prepare meals as family. I mean, some of my fondest memories from when I was really, really young is the time in the kitchen when me and my grandmother or my mom would prepare these meals together. It's like, it's such a bonding experience and such a perfect opportunity for your children to bond with you as well. And I know that you planted a mean garden. What was it, like 75, 80 plants that you planted? And you go for walks after.
I did.
I mean, that like all of those things are just like built into your lifestyle now.
Well, and I feel like, you know, this is the great opportunity that we have all had during this worldwide pandemic. You know, it's given us a kind of a forced hiatus, if you will, with many people working from home or many people having to be home. And it's given, you know, we've all had a lot of times on our hand. And, you know, there's two ways you can do it. You can sit in front of the TV and binge on Netflix, which I have done, but I haven't, that's not what it's all been about. And I've really taken the opportunity to say, hey, how can I grow in this life? And that not only for me, for my kids, you know, they're sitting here watching and developing healthy life habits based on what Michael and I do. And, you know, I don't want to teach them, you come home from work and you binge on tortilla chips and salsa in front of the TV. I mean, it's just, it's just not the healthiest thing to do. And it didn't feel healthy either. And so I feel literally like I have turned the clock back 10 years, the energy that I have. And you mentioned that, you know, we're going for walks. And I mentioned this earlier, we have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, and our 4-year-old is, you know, riding his bicycle. And so it gives us an opportunity to get him out. You know, they've been sheltering in place, so they have a lot of pent up energy. And so, you know, we go out every evening together and we get some exercise. And, you know, every night we're out after dinner. And depending on how long it takes us to wrap up dinner, some nights are longer than others. You know, we'll go between like a 4 and a 7 mile walk. We just finished a 7 mile walk to our city's Jewel Park at Piedmont Park this afternoon. And, you know, and they sleep better. I'm sleeping better. It's just, you know, I mean, you know, the fuel that we put into our bodies is what drives every other activity in our life, you know, emotionally, spiritually, everything is rooted in it. And so having a reboot has really just paid dividends everywhere.
Oh, this is music to my ears. What's your most favorite meal so far?
So I had, an amazing pasta, Greek dish with these grape tomatoes and this this really good cannellini bean, and it had some balsamic vinegar in it, and it was just so tasty. And that's the myth that I think I really had to kind of break for myself, is that I was, you know, I always teased you about trying to turn me into a bunny rabbit.
Oh yes.
And I knew that I knew that, and you know, I knew that I wasn't going to feel. Yes. Hashtag plant based. And I knew that wasn't going to be sustainable. I needed to sit down and I needed to feel, well, the difference now is I know the difference between feeling satisfied and stuffed, because there is a difference. But I am eating foods that are healthy and they're complex and they stick with me. You know, I do the overnight oats in the morning, and, you know, I'm having oatmeal with my children, and then I'm not starving when I'm walking around the hospital, and, you know, there's no healthy options there. And so, you know, I've been very intentional about bringing my lunch and about my water intake, and, you know, it's a simple equation after that. Good yeah. in equals good out.
Yeah, it's funny how simple things become once we stop making excuses and just like face the truth of what's actually is happening and what it is that we're doing and what's the true motivation behind the things that we're doing. And as you said, perhaps some of those actions that we're taking are truly not because we need them, but because we're just trying to cover up something else.
Yeah. And, you know, I used this app called Lose It, that was very helpful for me. And I just needed a little bit of accountability and some structure, because when I don't properly plan, that's historically when I get into trouble. And nobody likes to feel like they're starving and then they're searching frantically for a healthy option. I mean, that always ends in disaster for me. Mm-hmm. So I've been very intentional about creating healthy snacks in the house, you know, be it hummus and fresh cut veggies. And, you know, I've been doing like a fruit bowl at night where, you know, I have like a quarter cup of blueberries and some and two strawberries. I mean, that's like 20 calories, and it feels like, I don't know, it's just, I get the sweet, I get the little tart. It's just, it just has been working. So
I love it. If there are people who are listening and they're like, okay, well, maybe I kind of want to try it, but I'm not sure. Maybe it's too late. The pandemic is almost over. Fingers crossed. But maybe it's too late to make a shift, or maybe they're in doubt, but they are curious and they are wanting to feel what you're feeling. They are wanting to feel better. What would you tell them?
I would say that you don't need a world pandemic to have some introspection and reboot your own life. You can do that any day of the week. And the first thing that you'll need to do is write down what doesn't work for you, and then work backwards from that. And, you know, getting resources. And so, you know, I ask you a ton of questions when they pop up and I need some direction. I've also done my own research and found a lot of tasty recipes that, you know, I can make and that I think are very kid friendly. And, you know, the other night we did this like a twist on a holiday meal, and I made sweet potatoes with a little bit of pumpkin pie spice just sprinkled on them in the oven, and the kids devoured them. I mean, it almost tasted like we were having a slice of pumpkin pie in the middle of summer. But, you know, that's a sweet potato is excellent food that keeps you from feeling hungry later. So I would just say know your resources and start making a plan. Just make a plan. Try it for a week.
I love it. I love it, Zach. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for inspiring me, for sharing your story with everybody and being vulnerable, being open about it. I really, really appreciate it. I cannot wait to see you and give you a really real hug when it's legal again.
I know. And listen, I want to thank you because you have always led by example. And even when I wasn't ready, you still were doing laps around me. And then when I was, I just kind of tapped you on the shoulder. And of course, you were right there. So it's your joy. It's what you put out in the world that's attractive, right? And it's attraction rather than promotion. So if you really want to feel better, then hang out with somebody that does.
I love it. I love it, Zach. I love you. Thank you so much.
I love you too, sweetheart.